You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 42 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And should we get right into the beer of the week this week?
Sure, why not? We have here, you picked up earlier today, the Founders Breakfast Stout. We've been continuing to work our way through the Founders line.
And this is one of the flagship Founders beers, the Founders Kentucky Breakfast Stout that's barrel-aged in bourbon barrels. That's like the beer. It's one of the beers in the country. But this is just the Breakfast Stout, double chocolate coffee oatmeal stout.
All right, so a little about this from the Founders website. The coffee lover's consummate beer, which is interesting because neither of us love coffee, I would say. You love coffee?
I like coffee.
I don't drink coffee.
I'm a coffee liker.
All right, but you don't love coffee. Brewed with an abundance of flaked oats, bitter and imported chocolates, which I guess that's good for Valentine's Day as we're recording this, and two types of coffee.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, good sir. This stout has an intense, fresh roasted Java nose, toasted, topped with a frothy cinnamon colored head that goes forever.
Ooh.
And then on Beer Advocate.
Heads that go forever for Valentine's Day.
Yeah. A score of 99 and a 100 from the nose.
Wow.
A perfect 100.
Really?
And this, again, this is not rate beer. This is not rate inflation here.
Wow.
This is legitimate.
We're talking, are you looking at the right thing? We are drinking a perfect 100 beer right now?
Well, by the bros. I mean, it was only a 99 by the...
Still, that's pretty good. I consider a 99 pretty solid beer.
Yeah, as you should. Let me see if I can look up the Kentucky Breakfast out here, what they have for that one.
I mean, that's like 150. That's the thing. Is like,
it's like the GPA thing.
Yeah, there's nothing that you hate more than people who have GPAs over 4.0. And the only reason that you hate this is because you had a 4.0 in high school and couldn't do any better. And so people were able to do better. You're angry at them.
It's just ridiculous. The bros have not rated the Kentucky Breakfast Stout.
Really?
But it has scored a perfect 100 on 3,067 reviews on Beer Advocate.
I'm told I actually talked to a person at the beer store, and if you know me, you know I don't like to talk to people.
That is true.
Especially you. But especially you on this podcast.
No, you don't like to be talked to me outside of the podcast. Oh, this is the only time we talk.
I'd prefer the podcast to be just awkward silence, though, or that you'd forget to record the entire thing so nobody would ever hear it.
Good times.
But I talked to the person at the beer store that I got this at, Teku Tavern in Lower Queen Anne, and I asked if they were going to be getting the Kentucky Breakfast Stout, because I heard a rumor that it's going to start being distributed to Washington State around April 1st, and he said, oh boy, oh yeah.
that's an affirmative?
Yeah.
I don't quite know how to read that, but okay. Good. that is not an April Fool's Day that it will be distributed around April 1st.
It might be March 1st. I don't know. It's the first of some month. What do you think of this?
It's the first of the month. This is like a very well done coffee beer. Which is not my favorite type of beer, I wouldn't say, because I don't like coffee. But it's good nonetheless.
I'm going to say I don't think this is a perfect 100 beer.
That's a hot take.
It's like a 95 beer.
That seems reasonable.
Just not sour enough for me, though.
Well, that's why you've got the backup beer for later that is extremely sour.
The second beer. I've started getting into this brewery from, I think they're from Pittsburgh, named Dre Lag. I can't talk about it with you because all their beers, it's wild ales, and they're all very sour.
It sounds like it.
So, that's my side beer. In the spirit of Valentine's Day. You have to have a side piece. Anyway.
Should we talk about, if we come back to food ratings, rankings, brackets, whatever we're going
to
do here.
Yes. And I need to tell you about the Little Woody's Burger of the Week.
Okay. Yeah, we've got two burgers of the week, right? Have you had this week's?
I have.
Okay, and we missed last week because of the fact that we recorded early due to my power being out after the snowstorm. So, all right, last week's, let's start with that.
Are we talking about the burgers right now?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so last week's burger, This is Burger Month at Little Woody's, if you're not caught up. And if there are four different chefs from throughout Seattle who've designed burgers that Little Woody's is having for a week.
Wait, is there like a more fancy word for us to say that? Like a more trendy, hipsterish word?
Oh, man.
They've handcrafted these burgers?
Curated?
That's good. I curated, yes.
You like that one? So last week's burger was a fried oyster burger.
I'm out on that.
You're out on that. I thought I was out on it, and I was pretty in on it when I tried it.
Interesting.
At the time...
How many times have you had oysters?
Numerous times.
Really?
Yeah, I'm having oysters.
Okay, that's a thing you're doing.
Yeah.
You're just going out with your oyster friends.
Look, you're not there every time I'm eating.
I'm aware that I'm not.
You're just there most of the time.
But I feel like I'd like to know what you're
you
eating.
You want me to inform you every time I have oysters?
Yeah, in the future, please do that.
just had oysters.
Send me a photo. Maybe text me a photo.
Okay. I thought I was out on it, but I was pretty in on the fried oysters.
How did they complement the taste of the burger?
See, the thing about oysters is, especially the fried ones, is they don't have a lot of flavor on their own. So they kind of just picking up everything that was around them.
Interesting. I've never had oysters, for the record.
What?
Yeah.
You've never had oysters?
That's maybe why I'm shocked about this. I have never in my life eaten an oyster.
And you thought maybe we were the same person.
That's true. Except for sour
beer. Like a Fight Club type situation podcast. Except you knew.
I'm doing both voices. It's really remarkable. It's very high level stuff.
You're like, why would I have a brother who doesn't have the same last name as me?
I mean, actually, if I could do your voice, I should probably do it on all podcasts, since my voice is terrible for podcasts.
And I think we both think our voice is terrible for podcasts.
Well, everyone thinks that, first off. But like, people,
people have told you.
Oh, I get complaints. It's mostly about volume.
Okay, about volume. Yep. I try to turn you down as much as I can. Anyway, so that became the fried oyster burger. There was tzatziki sauce, right? Which, it was a lot of tzatziki.
I sometimes feel you can't have too much tzatziki.
Never. But you also don't like cucumbers.
I don't want them.
You basically don't like food. The only thing you're in on is the word fried.
Is it?
Yeah. And I guess the word burger. Anyway, there was no meat patty on that one. It was just the fried oysters.
Wait, it was just the fried oysters?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It was good. It was, at the time, it was the number one burger of Burger Month.
Out of two.
Yes. Week one burger, I'm kind of down on.
Refresh my memory.
Week one burger was basically a basic burger with some like fried peppers on it.
Okay.
Yeah. And it just wasn't flavorful enough. There wasn't enough sauce. There was not enough going on. But we get to week three, and Aaron Willis, I want to find the description of this burger, because I had this today, and I can tell you, it is stiff competition here. I can't imagine week four's burger beating this, because this burger was excellent.
Wow.
It was the best burger that I've had in calendar year 2017.
How many burgers have you had in calendar year
2017? Aside from these ones?
Can't be that many.
At least three.
Okay. I'm a little disappointed now that I don't think I will be able to get it.
Okay, let me read to you the description of this burger. This is Willis Burger Merguez Sausage Burger. So the ingredients are roasted garlic, chimichurri aioli, piperod of sun-dried tomatoes, and piculo peppers. I'm pronouncing all these words wrong.
I think you mostly got chimichurri.
Arugula, ciudad in-house spiced lamb sausage link. There you go.
Huh.
And a burger patty. I know that you like a sausage link and a burger patty.
That's a nice double. Yeah.
So it was like a spicy Spanish lamb sausage link. And then also the sun-dried tomatoes on top. There was a lot of sauce. It was dripping. It was flavorful. That is what I'm looking for in a burger.
Yeah, like I said, I'm disappointed that I probably won't have the opportunity to try this.
I don't know if I would eat it daily. Because I'm still kind of feeling the sausage link.
That sounds about right.
But it was so good when I ate it.
It was worth it?
Oh, yeah. Definitely worth it.
All right. Well, I'm curious to check back next week about the fourth week of Burger Week.
You'll see me wearing my hat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So wait, how do you, like, how do they keep track of it? Is there a card?
There's a card.
Okay.
I'll show you later.
It's like the Seinfeld episode where Elaine is trying to get the free sub.
I think she got a free hat in that.
I believe she did.
Oh, well, there you go.
So let's come back now to the subject of food rankings, ratings, brackets. You said you had an epiphany about this.
I mean, to me, there's only one thing. We got some feedback. There were some options thrown out there. But there is only one food that divides people.
And that is?
And that's burgers.
I mean, I had the exact same conclusion.
We had the exact same conclusion. People feel so strongly about burgers.
Weirdly, I had this conclusion. So I was at one of my favorite restaurants, Varlamos Pizzeria near the UW campus.
And you ordered a burger.
Yeah, I was eating a calzone, football-sized calzone, as one does at Varlamos. But across the street, there's a new burger place. And I was
really?
I'd like to try that and rate that. And okay,
I'd like to try that and rate that.
So here's the thing. Number one.
Sounds almost predatory.
Like a little like Dennis from Always Sunny. The first thing is, like a lot of places, you know, like we've talked about maybe doing barbecue, a place that we tried to rate in the past. Like there's different barbecue specialties in each place. One place it's going to be brisket. One place it's going to be ribs. One place it's going to be, you know, pulled pork or whatever it is.
God, ribs are great. Brisket's great.
They're all great. All barbecue matters. But burgers, you're just getting the burger. Like, it's a straight head-to-head comparison. Like,
More or less.
There are other factors. Quality of the fries often is a factor.
Well, there are different types of burgers.
But it's a more direct...
Are you making the argument that there's only one kind of burger in each place you go to?
It's a more direct comparison is what I'm saying.
Yes. When you talk about Dick's, you're like a Dick's burger.
Right.
Right? It could mean a deluxe, a special, a cheeseburger. But you're talking about the Dick's burger.
They're all in the same burger family.
But
the
to
same
me,
genus.
It's just about how divisive burgers are.
It's true.
Well, you know, like we talked about teriyaki, and like we could review teriyaki, but everybody likes teriyaki, and they're more or less in the teriyaki family, right?
Yes.
It's just like I like teriyaki. I'll probably like most teriyakis, but when I think of burgers, there are burgers that I have such strong allegiances to. Like I feel very strongly about certain burgers.
Yeah. So how do you think we should do this? Do we have to both eat at the same burger place in the same week?
We have to have the same burger and meet in the middle. Spirit of Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day. I know that we have to share a drink and each have one straw in the same drink.
Okay, that's, you know how much I hate that, though.
Wait, do you hate that? Wait, you specifically hate that thing?
Not as much as sharing a straw. The sharing a straw is actually what
I Yes.
Is you know.
I don't know if we should do a bracket. That's the thing. Cause
I don't think we should do a bracket. I think we should do a ranking.
A ranking?
Yeah.
We should try to
it's
eat
the
through.
Search for Seattle's best burger.
There was a ranking, I'm pretty sure this was Seattle Magazine, had like the 40 best burgers of Seattle, right? And we should try to eat through those burgers as much as we can.
I mean, 40 is a lot.
Look, I'm ready to eat a lot of burgers.
I also don't know how long this is ongoing. Is this open-ended? Is there a time limit on it? I don't know. We'll figure this all out.
But we should be eating at least one burger per week and ranking it.
All right, that seems like a reasonable goal. It doesn't seem likely to kill me.
Ongoing. In perpetuity, we should be eating one burger per week and ranking it.
You know what burger I am possibly planning to have this week?
What's that?
Whataburger.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen a Whataburger and I wanted to go there, but the people who were with me, I felt a little bit shamed.
I mean, the problem with Whataburger, I assume you were in Austin at this point.
I was not in Austin. I don't know if they have Whataburger in Austin. I was in San Antonio.
Okay. But, like, usually when you're at a Whataburger, like, near a Whataburger location, you're also near great barbecue
and
possibly Tex-Mex. Yeah. So those are all... Fortunately, I will not have that issue because I would go in the Dallas airport where probably the
alternatives are not that good. I like that you have this planned out.
Oh, yeah. Like... Oh, yeah.
You're salivating just thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I've heard Whataburger, there's some sort of sauce that they have, maybe fry sauce. Are you aware of this?
I'm not because I don't think I ordered it the one other time I went to Whataburger also in an airport.
Is it the same if it's in an airport?
I mean, I think with a fast food restaurant, it's probably not as different.
More or less the same. I mean, I also saw it in an airport. And there was San Antonio Airport. I wanted Whataburger. I gave in to the public shame of my friends and coworkers.
Wow.
And I didn't get it.
That's but, so disappointing. I thought we raised you better than that.
I know. It haunts me to this day. But we have to talk about burgers, right? I'm so happy we were on the same page about that. I was worried you were going to say something else.
What did you think I was going to say?
I don't know. I was fretting about it.
You were fretting? I was
terrified for this moment.
I was curious to find out if we had the same epiphany, and I'm glad to know that we did, because it reaffirms that we are, in fact, the same person. just part of the personalities hasn't tried oysters.
There was an argument on Twitter about, I don't know who it was. Somebody on Twitter was saying more or less that they don't like In-N-Out.
Uh-huh.
Do you see this?
No.
On Seahawks Twitter, there was a conversation about burgers. And then at that moment, I mean,
I've seen so many In-N-Out conversations on Twitter. They just all like have run together.
Okay. Are you searching for these conversations?
No, I just feel like that's a thing people talk about a lot.
In-N-Out is very divisive for whatever reason, because it's pretty much the perfect burger.
You know what surprisingly divisive argument I briefly got into last weekend?
Really?
The movie Boyhood.
That's not a
No, people were very anti-Boyhood.
Who's anti-Boyhood?
Other members of the True Hoop Friday podcast, as it turns out.
Who? Name names.
Zach Harper in particular.
Zach, I've never heard of this person, but he has bad taste in movies. At least movie.
It was unfortunate. I was not on most of Friday's podcast, so I was not able to chime in live. I had to tweet after the fact.
I was going to say you must have been yelling at the radio.
When I listened back to it.
I don't really like hearing about other podcasts that you're on this podcast, though.
When I cheat on this podcast. On Valentine's Day, no less.
Okay. Let's reel it back in here. Like the oysters. I assume you reel those in.
What?
Look, we've never had an oyster before. Anyway, we don't know.
Should we talk about sports?
Let's talk about sports here for a second.
All right, I think we're mostly going to have kind of an extended roundup this week. Not a ton of Seattle sports news to get to, and then we'll finish up by talking a little bit about the NBA leading into All-Star Weekend.
A lot bit about the NBA. You're going to name drop. You're going to go over your top 10 players. We're going to hear your favorites for the 3-point shootout and the Shooting Stars.
It's all new to me.
But you don't
I've
have
got some analysis of the celebrity game.
Do you?
No, I don't.
That was okay, you're cheering for Win Butler though, right?
Well, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
That's all that matters.
Wanted to start with a quick update.
He's going to be the MVP. Should we save celebrity game? He's playing, right?
He is.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought he was cheated last year, personally.
He won MVP. Didn't he?
Did he? No, he didn't. Will Butler was furious about it.
Will was furious about it. I see. But he talked post-game, because that was the whole controversy, where he was talking about Canadian healthcare, right? And then was cut off.
That's as form as the celebrity game. It's like he could have had the Grammys. he's like, I'm going to do really well in the celebrity game and talk about Canadian healthcare.
He was basically told stick to sports.
He was like, Prime Minister Joe Trudeau knows what he's talking about.
Joe Trudeau, that was too much.
Joey T. Okay.
Right. Let's get back on phone. Update on the Sonics Arena. Chris Hansen's group has filed a...
Let's call it Russell Wilson's group.
Okay. Russell Wilson's group has filed a new proposal to vacate Occidental Avenue, which is the last step for them to have the ability to build an arena in SoDo as soon as they secure an NBA or an NHL team. There will be a 60-day city review period after which the Seattle City Council can take this up. And as you'll recall, when they previously voted on this, I guess last year, they voted 5-4 against vacating it, thus stalling this project. And the change since then is at that point they were voting it in the context of the previously existing memorandum of understanding between that ownership group and the city, which included, you know, some city bonding to help pay for the arena. Since then, the Russell Wilson group has announced that they will privately fund the arena entirely and not take any city, use the city's bonding capacity at all, which makes this a better deal. But I don't know if that's going to be enough to get the vote to flip here.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm I think that, you know, there's going to have to be probably more of a public effort to rally support for the arena, much the same way as there was 4 or 5 years ago almost now, when the city council was initially voting on this memorandum of understanding. And Sonics fans turned out in droves to support this, and I think that probably was a factor in it eventually passing.
Huh. There was also some news about the Key Arena renovation project, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing solid there.
Wasn't there some sort of forum involved?
There was a forum with local residents, and a local Queen Anne group presented the results of what seemed like a decidedly unscientific study about whether people wanted renovation to Key Arena. But it turns out that people who live near Key Arena probably don't want a bunch of construction and NBA and NHL games there on a regular basis,
yeah,
which seems kind of obvious. Given the not in my backyard nature of the city of Seattle, I could have predicted that one.
Yeah, who did this study?
I'm going to have to pull up the...
It certainly wasn't Russell Wilson.
it was a survey conducted outside of Key Arena.
I love that that's a reference that we still use. Based upon a class that I took in college in like 2004.
It is. It's the most inside joke possible.
Oh, I thought you were going to play some live audio there.
The Uptown Alliance,
okay,
is a neighborhood group encompassing Lower Queen Anne, which surveyed 800 nearby residents and workers.
And they're not interested in both renovating Key Arena or having NHL and NBA games happen there.
I mean, the question was, is a remodel and expansion okay if they preserve the iconic roofline? To which,
who cares about the roofline? By the way, are there people out there who really care about the roofline?
I don't know. 41% agreed, 33% were neutral, and 27% disagreed.
Okay.
So you can really read that pretty much any way you want.
I heard that the AG presentation focused a lot on concerts also.
That sounds reasonable. I did not read that.
I may have made that up.
I mean,
Wynn Butler was pro, though.
The one possibility that still exists is, you know, everyone has been thinking about this in the terms of, obviously, renovating to make this into an NBA NHL arena, which is what the mayor has been pushing. But, you know, there is the possibility that instead you go the opposite direction, make Key Arena more intimate, a better concert venue, and as opposed to trying to think of it as primarily a sports arena.
Interesting. So it could be renovated. You're thinking that it could be renovated alongside a project, an Occidental Street project for the Russell Wilson group?
That's what I'm thinking there, yeah.
And it would basically function as like a Bumbershoot arena, as a big touring concerts arena.
Well, something probably in between the capacity of a Soto arena and then, you know, I guess WAMU Theater would be the next level down at this point in Seattle.
Yeah.
Is the Paramount? How does the Paramount compare in capacity?
It's much bigger than the Paramount.
Okay, so yeah. So that's kind of the next level down. There's not an intermediate. I guess the Tacoma Dome is the intermediate step, right?
It's quite a bit bigger.
Yeah.
It's like 5,000 cap at the WAMU Theater.
Yeah. So I think there is a niche for that sort of size of venue, but you would probably know that better than I would.
I'm just unsure if it makes sense for a renovation and how basketball comes into the conversation.
As far as the plans that are being submitted right now?
Yeah.
I mean...
Because, like, do whatever. If it doesn't have to do with basketball, I don't care what happens with Key Arena.
Clearly, the Oakview Group, which is the other presumed bidder on this request for proposals from the city, they're thinking of this as a venue for the NBA and NHL. AEG, I think, mostly just doesn't want to lose its position as the primary place for concerts in the city of Seattle with Key Arena.
Okay.
That's my read of the situation.
All right. Fair enough. Go Hawks.
Yeah. we'll continue following that. One thing I did want to mention.
I'm just surprised. I want to come back. I'm surprised that you would say, despite the fact that the Russell Wilson Group has agreed to pay for the arena entirely on their own, right?
And that's a hunch more than anything else.
Your hunch is still that wouldn't flip that one last vote.
No, at that point,
didn't they go into the last vote expecting for it to be a yes vote?
Yes, and that turned out to be incorrect.
Okay.
I mean, I think just people become more entrenched when they've taken a vote on a position.
Okay.
And the other thing that we probably need to acknowledge is the despicable treatment of the women who voted no on the
last. Wasn't great.
On the street vacation. That doesn't help your chances.
Yeah, that was not a great long-term play.
It was both short-sighted and obviously, sexist. Unacceptable in terms of the way they were treated. So
yeah, this is not normal.
So well done. Congrats to the small minority of Sonics fans who lashed out in that way and acted against their own best interests.
And then what about the Sounders? Pretty big news this week.
I wanted to mention something else while we were on this topic, which is...
Your love of roof lines?
Yes. I'm plugging another podcast here that I happen to listen to today. Yeah.
I wasn't even on it. We're plugging all sorts of other podcasts. You should listen to any other podcast besides this one.
The Seattle Growth Podcast is doing its entire second season on the Sonics issue.
Okay, you made that seem as if people were aware of it.
And there's...
What is the Seattle Growth Podcast?
I mean, it's a podcast on the growth of the city of Seattle, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, I had never listened to it before I was pointed towards the episodes on the Sonics, and there are a couple of them out. The first one has an interview with a former member of the Sonics ownership group, and then the...
Who's that?
I don't remember his name off the top of my head.
Okay.
And then the lawyer who led the case for the city of Seattle against Clay Bennett's ownership group.
Who's that person's name?
Again, off the top of my head.
Okay.
I'm struggling with that.
Sounds like it's really good stuff.
Then there was also an interview with Tim Burgess of the city council.
There you go. You remember somebody's name.
Yes. And then the second episode, which is the one I'd really recommend checking out, it's Pete Nordstrom and Wally Walker, who are two members of the Russell Wilson ownership group.
Yeah.
And Pete Nordstrom gives an account of how the vote to sell the team went down, since he was on the board of the Sonics under Howard Schultz when they sold the team to the Clay
Bennett
group.
Yeah. Oh, I'm curious to hear that.
Yeah. I don't think I'd ever heard quite that level of detail about that process. So it was interesting. And then, you know, so I'd lay out kind of where the Sonics Arena group is and the next steps.
How many episodes are there in this?
Those are the only two. And then the bonus episode with Tim Burgess.
So it's a 3-episode season.
And there are more coming.
There are more coming.
Including with critics.
When are they going to have you on?
Apparently not. But including with critics.
Apparently not.
Of the Soto Arena. So
they said your mic was too quiet.
They did. Yeah. So I wanted to shout that
They've
out.
They've had a lot of criticism of you on podcasts.
We'll have a link on the blog to that. The Sounders. Yes, played their second, this technically was a scrimmage that they played down in Tucson against the San Jose Earthquakes last Tuesday and lost 1-0 in that matchup, which obviously is devastating and the season is over now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the big news, first off, Clint Dempsey met the media on Tuesday for the first time during training camp, told them he's about 85 to 90% so far as he's making his comeback, but remains cleared and, you know, kind of on track to play.
This is the news.
Yeah.
The champs just got cavalry.
It is pretty impressive.
Clint is coming back.
I don't know if it's quite the Warriors adding Kevin Durant, but, you know, it's... I mean, they weren't even the champs, so I guess it's totally better than that.
Yeah. Way better. It's the Cavs adding...
Kyle Korver?
No, somebody that the Cavs added over the offseason.
It's not DeAndre Liggins. One player the Sounders will not have with them going forward, though, is Steve Zakuani, who is kind of attempting a comeback as he was training with the team and has ended that after he was training down in Tucson.
Back to the booth?
Yep, back to as a broadcaster. So the Sounders briefly at home in Seattle. They're doing media day this week. And then later this week, we'll be heading to Charleston for their remainder of their preseason schedule. On Saturday, they will be facing the Charleston Battery, who is a second division soccer team.
Okay. So fierce rival.
I like that I put it out there, a soccer team, as if like they're not playing a baseball team. That would be weird.
And how many weeks is it until the season starts?
It's not that many.
It's like...
It's 2 weeks from Saturday.
Good God.
Is the season opener.
Wow, and the season ended 2 weeks from Saturday.
Yeah. We don't really have I don't think there was any news to discuss, but the Mariners pitchers and catchers reported, so their spring training also underway.
Yeah, I'm a little bit... I made that pledge that I was going to pay attention to baseball, and it's getting hotter. starting to feel the pressure of that pledge lately.
They haven't even played a game. I don't think there's any news so far out of Mariners.
Not just news, but man, it's coming.
Yeah.
It is coming. In a month and a half, I'm going to have to pay attention to baseball. And when you commit to paying attention to baseball, you're committing to a lot of time.
Not as long as the MLS season, but I guess there's more games.
Yeah, this is every day for like 10 months. Well, hopefully, the Mariners will be eliminated in Atlanta in August. We know what's coming.
I haven't looked at the schedule to make sure that's a possibility.
It's definitely a possibility.
All right, should we go now quickly to Husky football?
Sure.
The news earlier today, the report that Bush Hamden was the wide receivers coach. And
you have his name wrong in the notes, so I was nervous there for a second.
I updated it after I said that. And passing game coordinator, apparently headed to the Atlanta Falcons, is their new quarterback coach under offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian.
Which we should also talk about, right?
Oh, that's right. That was after the podcast last week. It's been out for so long, I forgot we didn't talk about it. Yeah, that's weird.
Okay, so first off, how crazy is it that Steve Sarkisian is going to be the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons?
Of the team that was just playing in the Super Bowl.
Like, when I saw that news, it did not make... My brain couldn't compute that news.
It didn't process?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm going to say I'm a bit of a Coach Sark defender. And I think he will be a good offensive coordinator in the NFL.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think the strength of his coaching was really his ability to run an offense.
I think Coach Sark can do it. It's a lot of pressure replacing Kyle Shanahan, and people are going to be very quick to dislike him.
I mean, the other thing is, like, the Falcons' offense was so good last season, especially compared to, you know, it was good in previous seasons, but it wasn't the best offense in the league.
He'll be judged for regression to the mean.
Yeah, he's going to get blamed for it.
Yeah, and that's not a position you want to be in, unfortunately.
That's not making regression to the mean work for you.
He's making regression to the mean work against him.
Kyle Shanahan is really making regression to the mean work for him. Going from the Falcons to the 49ers, they can't possibly get any worse.
I guess that's true. But Bush Hamden is a huge loss for the UW staff. So he's somebody who had become very important, not just as a coach, right? But it was a huge fixture in recruiting.
And that's why I guess the timing of this could have been a lot worse, because it comes after the Huskies signed their recruiting class, including three top wide receivers. And then they had a wide receiver commit for 2017.
Yeah, so wide receiver Austin Osborne committed last week. And I think a huge part of that was because of Bush Hamden. I was reading all of his statements about it when he committed. And he was like, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to commit and then reopen my commitment. He's like, I'm all in. It is UW, that is where I'm going. And it's like, I wonder if that's still true.
The most important thing to me is loyalty.
Yeah. I was a little bit surprised to see Bush Hamden's name come up, but at the same time, he's somebody who I think was due for a bigger job.
Can we use the term rising star here?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's amazing how quickly he went from quality control assistant for the Huskies his first year.
And what is Jabron Hamden doing?
I'm not sure. I had actually forgotten about that connection until I looked up his bio earlier.
Really?
Yeah.
That's all I think about every time I hear about Bush Hamden.
Okay. That's fair.
Anyway.
So we'll see what the Huskies do. This is still not official. You know, some indication that, you know, it looks like it's going to happen, but it's not a certainty.
And the person who's going to replace him, I read about this, but it was completely gone from my mind immediately. But somebody who had just joined the Husky staff and was previously at Oregon and seems like they're destined to be the replacement as wide receivers coach.
Well, I missed that. So now you're going to have to fill while I look this up.
At the same time, I mean, we're talking about your coach, you know? Right, like you can only
devastated. Do you know how the wide receiver coach was in 2015?
Probably Bush Hamden?
No, he wasn't. I told you, it was the quality control assistant in 2015. I don't know.
That shows how little I'm paying
attention. I'm asking you this question. Like, it's an honest question.
No, can you name, like, the Seahawks wide receiver coach? Look, if it ain't Ken Norton Jr., I don't know who they are. If they're not related to a fringe college quarterback, I don't know who they are.
So you mean Tyler Osborne, who was hired as a graduate assistant coach?
Yes, he's the person who seems destined for that job.
Okay.
Seems like the favorite to get that job. But at the same time, it's the goddamn wide receivers coach. Like, let's all just chill out here for a second.
It falls under the category of the things that people worry about now that Twitter exists.
And also, it's February.
Yeah, that too.
It's February and it's after signing day.
So,
not a lot of news happening. Should we talk about the Seahawks, a little bit of news?
Yeah, the Seahawks actually making some legitimate February news, again, after the podcast aired last week, by signing Blair Walsh.
Yep.
That's your reaction? That's all you got?
Okay, you want my hot take?
I want your hot take. Of course.
You always want my hot take.
20% hotter.
Blair Walsh will not play a regular season down for the Seattle Seahawks.
I mean, I don't think that take is that hot.
Wait, it's not that hot?
Have you seen his contract?
What is his contract?
I think Sheil Kapadia was the first I saw with this information on ESPN today. 1 year for $1.1 million, $800,000 base, $300,000 bonus, no guaranteed money. Like, that's not the contract of someone who is definitely going to be on the roster.
I felt like, okay, sure. All right, sorry. I'm sorry that my take wasn't hot enough for you. What is a Blair Walsh take that I can say that would be really odd?
Can I give you a Blair Walsh take?
Oh my god, this better be hot.
That the Seahawks did not break Blair Walsh when he missed that field goal against the Seahawks in the 2015 playoffs.
Okay.
And can I give you some thoughts on this?
Wait, you actually have thought? How much research have you done on Blair Walsh?
Extensive Blair Walsh research.
Okay.
So, obviously, the reason that people think that Blair Walsh is broken is because the Vikings released him last season after he went, made 75% of his field goals.
When was Hauschka broken, by the way?
79%. I mean, Hauschka actually hit like 88% of his field goals last year.
Yeah, just extra points. Those matter too.
79% of his extra points. So, a few things here.
That's actually kind of crazy that he hit a higher percentage of field goals than extra points.
Oh, yeah. No, it is very odd. We talked about that at one point, didn't we? A few thoughts here. Number one, past field goal percentage, and this is something that Football Outsiders has researched extensively, has no predictive power for what your field goal percentage is going to be going forward.
Like, okay,
that does not matter.
That doesn't make sense.
No, the only thing that matters is league average. There is, you cannot tell the accuracy of a kicker from their past accuracy.
What? So you're saying that I could be the kicker of the Seahawks?
That's not what I'm saying. Because it's within a certain band of people who are good enough to kick in the NFL. It's not saying that they're even necessarily... Like, if you looked at a five-year sample, there probably would be some players who would be legitimately better than others. But within a single season, the samples are so small that it does not matter.
Yes.
So, for example, I looked at kickers who made between 74% and 75% of their field, or 76% of their field goals in the past 10 years. And of the guys who were still in the league and kicked at least 20 attempts next year, they made on average 81.5% the next year, which is not quite league average, but close to it. Another way of looking at this, the odds of someone with Blair Walsh's career field goal percentage, 84%, if that's your true ability, the odds of you going 12 or 16 or worse, just by random chance, just completely nothing about skill whatsoever, just by random chance, are 15%. It's like 1 in 7.
Okay.
Here's another thing about Blair Walsh.
There's more things about Blair Walsh?
I've got a lot of Blair Walsh.
Okay, wait, sorry. I won't respond to... Maybe the next thing about Blair Walsh I'll be shocked about.
So in 2014, he went from making 87% of his field goals the year before to 74%.
Okay.
And then the next year, 2015, he made 87% again.
Okay.
Like that 1 year was a complete outlier and it didn't mean anything going forward. But because there wasn't a miss in the playoffs the year before, no one interpreted it as like this big deal where he's broken.
I'm going to throw this out there. You're saying that the Seahawks are making regression to the mean work for them?
So I've given all these arguments for why Blair Walsh is not broken.
I'm so excited.
And here's why I don't think it's a good sign.
Oh, no! Blair Walsh is broken.
No, he's not. I mean, the extra point percentage is a little bit more of a concern.
Kickers just can't be broken.
There is some
saying.
Predictive power to that. I mean, probably they can, but you just can't tell from 16 attempts whether they're broken or not.
Yeah.
Like, that's why you should bring him to camp and have him in a competition with a rookie.
Yes.
Because you, in training camp, you can have hundreds of attempts and get a reasonable sample size.
Yeah.
But here's the problem with the signing, is the thing that is consistent from year to year is kickoffs. Mm. And Blair Walsh is not that good at kickoffs. Steven Hauschka was very good at kickoffs. Last year...
Does Even with the new kickoff rules, though, does this matter as much?
Yes.
Okay.
Last year, Blair Walsh had touchbacks on 46% of his kickoffs. Hauschka had touchbacks on 63%.
Wow, Blair Walsh sucks.
I mean, he's fine. He's whatever. Like, and for the minimum, he's fine. But
is he being paid the minimum, though?
More or less.
The veteran minimum.
Yeah. I think the Seahawks can do better with a rookie of some sort.
Yeah, and that's basically what I'm saying, is that they're going to draft or sign an undrafted free agent rookie somewhere, pay them. What do you think the rookie minimum is? $350,000, something like that?
I think it's about $450,000. I don't know off the top of my head.
They'll get paid that, and there's no reason that you need Blair Walsh around.
And then the Seahawks will be saving about $4 million as compared to what Hauschka was making last year.
Yes. I'm really curious what the market's going to be for Hauschka.
Me too.
That's the other thought is that I have is that I think that the market might not be great for Steven Hauschka.
Which, who knows? Maybe then he does eventually come back at some point. But I think
and he comes back for the veteran minimum also.
Maybe not that little. But either way, you've created some competition.
Yeah, we just showed Steven Hauschka what's up.
I mean, I don't think in a punitive way. I'm just saying, like, that position was not solved forever. And now you've created some competition.
Yeah. Some kicker talk here in February.
Absolutely. The other news of the week, of course, with the Seahawks is the report on Tuesday that they will not be facing a penalty for the Richard Sherman injury and their failure to disclose it.
I wonder who we should credit with this. And should we credit Twitter?
For like digging up all the evidence of other teams?
I mean this honestly. Sometimes Twitter just changes things.
I think you're giving it a little too much credit.
Okay.
I mean, if Twitter affected NFL decisions, I think Josh Brown would have been punished significantly more severely at the start of last season.
Okay.
Like, you laugh at that. Like, you don't think that's a valid take?
I guess so. I don't. That was not what I was expecting at all.
All right.
But it's nice that the Seahawks won't be punished.
Yeah. It's good news. I don't think it made sense that they would have been.
They may have sent the game tape of Richard Sherman in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, he's fine. Richard Sherman's doing all right. Should we talk Husky basketball?
Yeah. I guess we'll start with the men.
Yeah.
So Markel Fultz missed last week's games with a sore knee. And I thought you had a good tweet going into the first of those two games at Colorado.
Okay. what was that? You're complimenting my tweets?
Yes, without liking them on Twitter.
You've gone out of your way not to like a single tweet that I have ever tweeted.
Maybe one.
You don't even like Bronski Beat at all.
I wouldn't listen to that for the record.
What?
That was pretty good.
Oh, so good. Anyway, there was a chance of Ewing Theory possibilities for the Huskies without Markel Fultz. Unfortunately, those didn't exactly play out.
They didn't. It was come for the additional minutes for Dominic Green, stay for the Ewing Theory possibilities. As it turns out, no, actually, just not have the Huskies not having their best player was a bad thing for them. And despite being actually reasonably competitive at times, they lost by 15 at Colorado and then ultimately 24 at Utah on Saturday, continuing a bad season.
Did you listen to Kevin Durant with Bill Simmons?
Yes.
Okay. First off, that was an excellent podcast.
It was.
Much better than this
podcast. There was your plugging a different podcast. Did you notice that one?
That was the one.
Okay.
I mean, it was such a good podcast. But also, did you hear what Kevin Durant said when talking about the draft?
I can't watch college basketball because they call fouls all the time.
I don't even like watching college ball because they call a foul on every play. He's like, why do we even watch college basketball? Durant said it. He's the third Pelton brother. He went right there. I was like, yes, Kevin Durant, that's it. Why do we even watch college basketball?
But we're also shouting out Markel Fultz.
Amazing. He said that and then went into a list of, like, more or less pretty in-depth for a current NBA player, of all of the top prospects in the NBA draft.
I mean, first, one thing I will say from NBA locker rooms, there are a lot of people who are well-informed about college prospects.
Really?
Because they watch, like, college basketball.
You're not even name-dropping. You're name-dropping, like, being in NBA locker rooms.
Yeah. I mean, this is, like, Tyler Hansbrough. I remember talking about this once.
Okay, for the record, I'm not surprised that Tyler Hansbrough is aware of college prospects. He probably wants a time machine to go back to college.
It might have been Miles Plumlee, though. I can't remember.
Him too.
For sure.
Okay. We're talking Kevin Durant here.
But Tyler Durant Hansbrough also is like a basketball junkie, so it's not surprising to me that he had scouting reports. And is he noted?
And then he called Dion Waiters a prophet.
And is he noted that Markelle Fultz is also from more or less the same area that he's from?
From the Beltway.
Yeah.
I thought
Which really underrated in terms of supplying elite NBA talent.
Really? Wait, who else?
Victor Oladipo, for example.
Define elite.
All right.
I just love that quote by Kevin Durant so much. It was a great podcast all around. We're going to talk about Kevin Durant a little bit in a second. But hearing him, I was like, he called Dion Waiters a prophet. And I was like, that would fit in perfectly on the Belton cast.
Would it? I don't know if we're that pro Dion Waiters.
I mean, I was disappointed that they
didn't
call
Dion Waiters a prophet, or did Simmons call it?
Called Dion Waiters a prophet because he was saying he was hanging out with Dion Waiters after they lost to the Warriors, and he was like, "Man, we're about to go on a run," and then they went on like a 13-game win streak. Right. And he was like, "Dion Waiters is a prophet." It's like that was good. That was a good.
It tied in with Shea Serrano's post last week on The Ringer that Dion Waiters. It's actually Dios. Yeah. Waiters.
I was disappointed they didn't talk about Seattle at all, though.
Yeah. Maybe a future podcast. Simmons said they were saving some things for the next time.
You mean the podcast?
Yes.
A future podcast that he does where we just talked to Kevin Durant about Seattle basketball.
It'll be great.
Yeah. Anyway, Husky basketball. They played some games.
So this weekend, they'll host Arizona State on Thursday, Arizona on Saturday. Haven't had an update yet on Fultz's status. Arizona State is, I would say, one of the two most winnable games remaining on the schedule. And maybe the only two winnable games remaining on the schedule. So the Huskies better win that one. Other than that, I don't really know what else to say.
There's nothing to say.
Except to note that I went last week to the Metro League semifinal to watch Nathan Hale take on West Seattle. And that was before Hale eventually beat Garfield 91-58 in their third match of the season.
Disposed of Garfield.
To win the Metro League Championship. Yeah, they, after playing a close game at Garfield in that nationally televised game a few weeks ago, they did not mess around in this.
How was Michael Porter in that one?
I can't remember what his final stat line was, but for a long period of time, he had, I believe at halftime, he had more points than Garfield did. So I watched him. So like I said, I watched
him. So sad when he's playing for Missouri next year.
Go Tigers.
Oh, God.
So I watched him against West Seattle in a game where West Seattle remained remarkably competitive for the fact that they were as outclassed in terms of talent as they were. But like I thought, okay, like Porter Ho-Hum, he had probably the weakest game I've seen him play of the four games I've seen between in person on TV. And then I came home and it turned out he scored 42 points. Like, that dude is just, I don't even know what to say. He's so good at basketball. I just don't even know what else to add.
Should we talk Romar or should we save it? I mean, I was so prepared to come on this podcast. I watched the game against Colorado. Actually, I didn't watch that game. I watched the first half against Colorado, got angry, turned it off, channeled my inner Kevin Durant. Watched some of Utah, and I was so prepared to say Lorenzo Romar's job is gone. And do you want to know what I thought really just sealed the deal?
What was that?
Malik Tai.
Oh, I mean, I don't even know what to say about
because that. It wasn't just incompetence on the court. It was Malik Time slapping an opposing fan in the stands, right? It was something where your team is bad and also having incidents off the court, like you've reached a different level there.
I mean, let's remain calm here.
But then I keep thinking about it, and I'm like, Michael Porter's there. Look, Lorenzo Romar has done such a good job of making himself indispensable.
I thought that Christian Campbell this week in the News Tribune had a really good summary of basically
the catch 22 of the situation.
Why it's not so easy is just saying, oh, let's fire Romar. Like, because look, either way, whether if Romar is gone, next year's team is not going to be good. So even if you think like, oh, even with Michael Porter, like it's not going to work next year because it didn't work this year with Markelle Fultz, like it's not going to work without him either. Huskies are screwed next year either way.
But they're not. Do you really think that they're screwed next year either way? Or if Lorenzo comes back and has Michael Porter plus all the recruits, do you think they'll be a bad team?
The fact that the defense has been so bad this year makes it harder for me to believe. I mean, I think Romar is correct that adding a top recruiting class to a bunch of upperclassmen is a much different thing than what they did a couple years ago.
Romar said this, or is this you talking?
No, Romar has said this as well.
Okay.
Yeah. That's basically been his case for his own job, more or less.
It's such a complicated situation. But you look at it and you're like, we have Markelle Fultz, pretty much the unanimous number one pick in the draft, right?
Yes.
And the team is still so bad.
I mean, the thing is, Fultz still isn't that much better than Andrew Andrews. Like, that's part of the problem. The part of the disconnect that I feel like I keep explaining this over and over to people. Like, NBA potential and college performance are such different things in 2017.
Okay.
I mean, so where you get drafted in the draft, it does not necessarily say anything about how good you are in college. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, the number three pick at this point probably is Dennis Smith from North Carolina, who is currently, I think, 2-12 in ACC play.
North Carolina State.
Or North Carolina State. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a substantial difference between those two.
That's something about that doesn't sound right.
North Carolina is not 2-12. Obviously, the ACC is substantially more difficult than UW. They're 3-10, I should say. They've lost their last five in a row and are ranked 102nd in KenPom. So obviously, UW is like it not in the same level of competition, but they have Dennis Smith plus Omar Yurtseven, who is a Turkish prospect who's considered a possible first-round pick, and they are, again, 3-10 in conference play. NBA potential is not the same as college production.
But Markelle Fultz is good.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. But it's not like he's good enough to single-handedly change the fortunes of a program.
Okay.
Which is obvious. He's good enough to turn a team that can't even compete on the road at Utah and Colorado to a team that like can at least play respectably at Arizona.
Well, we'll keep waiting for the season to be over to find out news about Lorenzo Romar. That's like basically what we're waiting on.
That was the tweet I got earlier this year. Like, let's just zoom ahead to where Jen Cohen says they're keeping Romar.
Yeah, we're watching Markelle Fultz, which is fun. I like watching Markelle Fultz. And we're just waiting to see what happens.
But it's not fun when Romar doesn't, or when Fultz doesn't play.
No, I mean, there's no reason to watch the Huskies if Markelle isn't playing.
In happier news,
Husky men.
You know, women's basketball. I attended my first game of the season on Sunday as they beat Arizona State 70-57 to complete the sweep of the Arizona schools after beating former UW assistant Adia Barnes and Arizona 91-55 on Friday night. Huskies moved up to number 9 in both the AP and the coaches' polls, just ahead of Stanford. Now are tied from the Pac-12 at 12-2 with both Stanford and Oregon State, although those teams both have the tiebreaker on them, so they would both need to lose for the Huskies to win the Pac-12.
Okay.
So, Kelsey Plum has now moved within 42 points of Brittany Griner for second in all-time Division I scoring.
Oh, man.
She's probably going to pass her this weekend. Huskies play Friday at UCLA, the toughest game remaining on their schedule. UCLA also ranked in fourth place in the Pac-12, and then on Sunday at USC.
Who's number one?
In the Pac-12? Oh, in the country.
Number one scorer ever.
Jackie Stiles.
Oh.
Is the one player left ahead of Griner.
How many points does Kelsey Plum need?
I only wrote down the how many.
only Brittany Griner matters.
Well, just because that's the only one that's going to be relevant this weekend in the context of this week's podcast. But
what we're looking at right now is how many points Kelsey Plum needs to be the greatest scorer in women's college basketball ever.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I mean, barring, you know, knock on wood, barring injury, that's really the only thing that could stop her from becoming the all-time leading scorer.
Wow. Oh, man. You're going to have to do some math really fast. That's another podcast feature that nobody has heard, is you doing math very quickly.
I don't have to do it I don't have to do that much math. I just have to look up this thread that has where she ranks. All right, so she is so Stiles is at 3,393 career points. Plum, after the game against Arizona State, is now at 3,241. So she's 152 points back.
That's pretty fast math.
Yeah.
It would have taken me 4 hours to do that.
They've got now let's see here, 4 games left in the regular season. So it seems overwhelmingly likely that she'll move and become the all-time leading scorer during the Pac-12 tournament, which will be played at Key Arena.
There we go.
So that'll be fun.
Man, hello.
Huskies, yeah, this weekend at UCLA and USC. So.
Okay. Should we talk basketball?
Let's talk about the NBA.
I've been waiting for so long to talk about the NBA because I have no idea what's going on.
Where do you want to start here? Should we revisit the list of 10 players I gave you to watch at the start of the
season? Let's do that. I've been watching them really closely.
Diligently watching them.
I looked at the list.
You named so many of them, right?
You said this earlier, and I thought I never heard of about 8 of them.
So I usually try to go obscure with this list, and I think I might have gone a little too obscure this
year. Pretty obscure.
Given that two of the guys have played like less than 100 minutes total. All right, the first player on the list was Malcolm Delaney of the Atlanta Hawks.
I mean, I should guess what team they're on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who he played for?
Yeah.
All right, I spoiled this one.
Because I was not going to get that one. Let me just tell you, I'm going to say I'm 0-1.
Delaney was a European veteran who signed with the Hawks as their backup point guard this summer.
Of all people I expected to be a European veteran from this list, Malcolm Delaney was not one of them.
Well, almost everyone on this list has played in Europe previously, because that's kind of the niche of this list. But he is shooting just 26% from three-point range this season, which has really tanked his efficiency, has been incredibly ineffective, yet still finishing a lot of games ahead of Dennis Schroeder, which says a lot about what the Hawks think of Dennis Schroeder.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of strange.
All right, next on this list, a guy who this is timely for, Juancho Hernan Gomez.
And I know what team he's on. Oh, I thought he was on the Knicks.
Oh, because that's his brother, Billy Hernan Gomez, is on the
net. No, damn it.
Oh!
You even said what team he was on.
And you got it wrong. But it's funny because, so I told you I was watching the Nuggets-Warriors game.
Yeah.
When I called the other night to talk, or you called the other night to talk to me. And Hernan Gomez was in the midst of scoring a career-high 27 points on 6-of-9 shooting as the Nuggets tied single half and single game records with 16 threes in the first half and 24 threes for the game in beating the Warriors.
Now, both of the Hernan Gomez brothers are pretty good.
Yes.
Better than the Fabulous Pelton brothers.
We'll talk a little more about Billy later.
Oh, really?
Later on this list. But Juancho, who has not played that much this season, is shooting 45% from three on his small sample and just looks phenomenal. It's weird. They have a weird thing where, for some reason, he plays a lot against Golden State and Cleveland, and he keeps like defending. He was mostly defending Draymond Green, but sometimes KD and LeBron, and it's like, this is not fair to Juancho Hernan Gomez, who is like a power forward, and you're forcing to defend the league's best small forwards. But he's going to be really good.
Okay.
Him and Jokic.
You're like so excited about Juancho Hernan Gomez.
Yeah. I mean, he was like my number 4 prospect in the draft.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, so, for this year?
Yeah. I feel really good about what he's doing.
Oh, man. Okay, who's next?
Patrick McCaw!
You even told me what team he was on last week, and I still don't remember.
The other team in that game, he's on the Warriors.
Okay.
He also started in that game because Klay Thompson was out. McCaw had a really big preseason. Everyone was very excited about his potential. Struggled, I think, he had some injuries, didn't play much in December, didn't play that well in December and January. He's only averaging 9.7 points per 36 minutes. But a really capable defender right away, good playmaker, and has made enough open threes that, you know, occasionally he'll play instead of Andre Iguodala in, like, near-death lineups for the Warriors.
Near-death lineup.
And if they have to lose Iguodala this summer for cap reasons, McCaw is probably going to step into that role.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, who's next?
Bobby Brown.
I'm going to guess that he's on. I have no idea.
Houston Rockets.
Oh, I was thinking maybe I would guess the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, I don't know why I put him on this list. He hasn't played at all. He's played 51 minutes total this season.
Okay.
Got waived briefly. Brought back.
Wow. Thanks for telling me I should have paid attention to somebody who was waived during the season.
All right, next up, Tim Frazier.
He's on the Hornets?
Well, that's close.
On the Pelicans.
Yes, he's on the New Orleans Pelicans. So Frazier, for a while, this was looking like a pretty good call because through December 21st, he was averaging 10.8 points and 7.3 assists per game. He had 7 double-doubles and a triple-double. Tim Frazier had a triple-double. But then Tyreke Evans came back, and they already had gotten Jrue Holiday back at that point, and he's only played 20 minutes in the game twice since then.
Wait, what? Why aren't they playing him more?
Because they just have too many guards.
Okay.
So, I mean, ideally someone would get traded at this point.
Okay. Who's next here?
Mindaugas Kuzminskas.
Maybe on the Knicks.
Yes! There we go! We finally got one.
I'm saying that I got Tim Frazier.
All right. Okay. Two. All right. We'll give you that one. So Kuzminskas has been like a nice energy player for them off the bench. They've played really well with their reserves on the court. Not so good with any of their starters. But honestly, the shot spot should have gone to Billy Hernan Gomez.
The other Hernan Gomez. But you can only have so many Hernan Gomez's on this list.
It was a one Hernan Gomez role, and I didn't want to put two players from the same team. Billy Hernan Gomez.
That's a good hint for me for the rest of the players. Yeah,
there you go. Billy Hernan Gomez is averaging 15.4 points and 13.7 rebounds per 36 minutes and shooting 54% from the field. He's really good.
Wait, which one are we talking at?
Billy.
That's the
Knicks one. So the Knicks one is like a traditional big man.
Okay.
Nuggets one, Juancho, is a stretch four.
What country are they from?
Plays in three. They're from Spain.
Okay, I was going to guess that.
Yeah.
Great. They're like the Gasol brothers.
Speaking of Spain, Alejandro Alex Abrines.
I'm going to guess he's on the Spurs.
Oklahoma City Thunder. He is shooting.
For some reason, I'm taking partial credit there.
Shooting 37% from three this year, but not really doing a whole lot else. He's one of the league's worst rebounders. And here's an interesting stat for you.
Okay.
Of the league's 14 worst rebounders among guys who have played at least 500 minutes, four of them are from the Seattle area.
What? Should I guess who they are?
Yes, there's a weird allergy among Seattle players to rebounding.
And we don't rebound. Only you rebound from the Seattle area.
I'm making it up for it.
Isaiah?
Yes.
Terrence Ross?
No.
He rebounds well?
I mean, first off, he's not from Seattle, but he rebounds much better than this. This is all like...
over two.
These are all tiny guards. You got Isaiah.
Jamal Crawford?
Yes.
It was over two because Terrence Ross does rebound Seattle. Better and is not even from Seattle. Okay, Jamal Crawford. Is Nate Robinson playing?
He is not. No, okay. He's playing in the D-League currently.
This is from Seattle. Oh, my God.
All right, the other two are both from Franklin High School.
Aaron Brooks?
Yes.
Okay. Who else is from Franklin High School?
Another one pushing 40 at this point. One of the league's oldest players.
He's very old from Franklin?
Yeah.
This is obvious?
Yes.
Oh, man. Let's see. Doug Christie went to Rainier Beach.
not in the league, sadly. He's on the Kings broadcast sometimes, I think.
Wait, who is this?
Jason Terry.
Oh, is the Jason last non-rebounder Terry.
From Seattle. Yeah.
So none of them rebound?
None of them, no.
But neither does Alex Abrines?
Nope.
Okay.
There you go. That's the commonality. All right, next up, Georgios Papayannis.
Milwaukee Bucks.
No, Giannis. Papa Giannis, which loosely translates to Papa John's, which is fun, playing for the Sacramento Kings, but more accurately not playing for the Sacramento Kings because he's played 10 minutes all season. He's mostly playing for the Reno Bighorns, where he's averaging 12 points.
I've been watching
points.
Him there.
8.2 rebounds.
I feel like that's the level of like basketball games that Luka would turn on the TV anyway. It's the Rio Bighorns.
On Friday nights, I think the D-League is on ESPN ESPN News.
That we're much more likely to watch that than to watch an actual NBA game.
All right. Pascal Siakam.
No idea. Somebody has to be on the Mavericks on this list, right?
No, no one on this list is on the
Okay,
Mavericks.
I guess I'm guessing that he's on the...
Oh, man, I should have put Yogi Ferrell there. Granted, he wasn't on a team at the start of the season, but...
I'm going to guess that he's on the Raptors.
That is correct.
Oh, I came up with that out of nowhere.
Siakam has started...
There's like certain teams who just have European players.
I mean, he's not European. He's African. He has started 38 games this season, but has been phased out because he's averaging just 9.3 points per 36 minutes, and teams basically weren't defending him at all. And now will not be playing at all because they've traded for Serge Ibaka.
What do you make of this trade?
I think...
Because it involved obviously not a Seattle player.
But a Washington, a UW grad, or a product, UW product in Terrence Ross.
Yeah.
And a Portland native. And he is a Northwesterner. I think it's mostly good for Ross. He's got a chance to possibly even start in Orlando, but more likely play a six-man role there. And for Toronto, I think it's a great deal. You know, they have Norman Powell to kind of step in and play that role that Ross has been playing, take over some of those minutes. And then They've really struggled anytime Patrick Patterson hasn't been on the court at power forward because they don't have any other legit power forwards on the roster. And now they've gone from that to having Serge Ibaka, who is a very legit power forward and even could play with Patterson a little.
It feels like the Raptors have been desperate for another power forward for since last trade deadline.
Oh, yeah. I mean, last year they had Luis Scola was playing that spot. This year they tried Jared Sullinger. They tried Siakam. They've been playing Jakob Poeltl and Baby Noguera at power forward, but those guys aren't actually power forwards.
How's Jakob Poeltl doing?
He's okay.
Okay.
The tough thing for him is Noguera has played quite well, so now he's their third center.
His nickname is Baby?
Yeah.
Lucas Noguera?
Yeah.
All right. I feel like this is the year in the NBA where there are more players that I've never heard of than any other year.
I guess, I don't know.
I look at the Knicks roster and I'm like, okay, I've really heard of these people or have never heard of these people.
You've heard of Ron Baker, right?
No, I've definitely not heard of Ron Baker.
You're not watching enough NCAA tournament the last couple of years.
What college do you go to?
Wichita State.
Oh.
There's two Wichita State guards in the NBA.
Wait, who's the other one?
Fred Van Vliet.
Fred Van Vliet's in the NBA?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
He's with the Raptors.
And who's the last player on this list?
Last on the list, Tomas Satoransky.
I feel like I should know this one, but I definitely don't.
Washington Wizards.
Oh, he's on the Wizards?
Yeah, second round pick several years ago. They drafted him ahead of both Draymond Green and Jrue Crowder.
But he made your list.
He finally came to the league. He has been useful for them on defense, but he's shooting just 6 of 26 from three-point range, which has made it hard for them to play him at shooting guard, certainly. And then they've just basically gone with Trey Burke at point guard so far. So he's not playing a lot.
Okay, let's revisit this list later, but maybe never again.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've had enough of this list.
Can we talk about some players who are maybe a little bit better and playing in the All-Star game this weekend? Tell us about your All-Star experience.
I mean, tell you about what it's going to be like? It's a little weird before it happens.
Yeah, telegraph what's going to happen. I mean, you're a prophet like Dion Waiters.
There have been three All-Star games in New Orleans, and I have attended. This will be the third that
you basically
I have
only go to All-Star games in New Orleans.
Yeah.
You've seen Trombone Shorty a lot of times.
And the only other All-Star game I've been to was last year in Toronto.
Who's performing in this one, by the way? Do you know?
Not off the top of my head, but I know it's a better group than last year because it's not opposite the Grammys this year, so that's much better.
It's opposite the Grammys last year?
Yeah.
Huh. Does that technically definitely make it better?
Yeah, because there's a larger pool available. Like, they had to pick from people who weren't at the Grammys last year. So you're, going down a couple of levels. And Drake didn't actually perform last year, as you recall. I think he just did the national anthem one night or something.
But you weren't there. You were there!
Or he did the introductions last year. Yeah.
Okay.
The first All-Star game I went to at New Orleans, the first All-Star game period I went to, Brandon Roy was one of the stars of that game. So it was a while ago now.
Okay.
The Sonics still existed.
Wait, really?
Yeah. He sent me. It was the last year. I went down there to cover Kevin Durant and Jeff Green in the rookie game.
Wow.
Ostensibly. And then it was kind of cool because I had nothing to do on Saturday night and Sunday because there were no Sonics, obviously, at any of those events. Except it wasn't, because then it turned out that at the press conference on Saturday, David Stern was like, the Sonics are moving, get over it. So that was a fun night.
The Sonics are moving, get over it?
Although, did Nate win the dunk contest that year? No, because Dwight Howard won the dunk contest that year.
Oh, man. Okay, so who's in the dunk contest this year?
The dunk contest this year is Aaron Gordon is coming back after a narrow second place law, narrowly losing last year to Zach LaVine,
okay,
who had decided not to defend his two consecutive titles even before he tore his ACL a couple weeks ago and is now out for the season.
Okay.
Derek Jones, a rookie for the Phoenix Suns, who has barely played this season but is reputed to be an incredible athlete.
Okay.
He's a rookie out of UNLV. And that's exhausting my knowledge of this in the dunk contest.
You're going to be there, though, holding up numbers.
Let me look this up. This is
Is it fun being at the dunk contest? Because I'm assuming I speak on behalf of the listener, and they've never been to a dunk contest before.
I think it's a lot more fun in person than it is on TV.
Really?
Yeah, because you just, there's an excitement in the arena. I mean, I've been.
See the nuances in the dunks that well?
Only on replay.
Okay.
I mean, so last year with Aaron Gordon and LaVine going at it, people would be excited when the dunk went in, but then you watch the replay and then everyone's going oh, because they see that, Gordon has gone, LaVine has gone behind the back or whatever Gordon did last year. So I've been to two really good dunk contests. That one and then the Dwight Nate one the first year in New Orleans was pretty good. The other one in New Orleans was the year that they did like team dunk contests.
Yeah, they've like tried out
versus West.
All sorts of crazy
and
things.
That was horrible.
Okay.
Like the dunks were fine. They were whatever. But like it was not the excitement of two guys dunking off against each other. The other two competitors this year, Glenn Robinson the third. Do you want to play who he plays for?
The Hawks?
Indiana Pacers.
Okay. He was on the Hawks though, right? At some point in his career? No? Glenn Robinson, no, his dad played against the Hawks?
He did play for the Hawks, actually. And then DeAndre Jordan rounds out the field.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. That's a pretty bad field. There's just no star power at all.
I think star power in the dunk contest is overrated.
I mean, DeAndre Jordan is like a pretty big star.
He is playing in the All-Star game.
But at the same time, you just know it's not. Big men in the dunk contest, just doesn't work.
It's a hard sell. I mean, JaVale McGee was pretty good the year he was in it. So okay. Maybe DeAndre will come up with something. We'll see. But yeah, I think that's an event that's more fun to watch in person than on TV.
Okay. And what about the game itself?
The game itself, you know, there's moments of brilliance. I mean, I think it's probably about the same experience in person as it on TV. There's moments of brilliance. And then basically you're just rooting for it to be a close game in the fourth quarter so players will try hard.
What are you looking for specifically for this year's game?
You know, I think last year was kind of the last stand of a generation in the NBA. Obviously Kobe with his final All-Star game. But then like guys like Dwayne Wade and Carmelo Anthony, who aren't here this year, didn't make the All-Star game. And Chris Paul isn't there because of injury. So now it's really about this younger generation, I think.
Mm-hmm. The Juancho Hernan Gomez generation?
Sadly, not the Nikola Jokic generation, but like Giannis becoming a starter for the first time is a good example, I think, of that changing of the guard.
He's starting? Giannis is starting?
Yeah, as he should be.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun. I'll watch that.
It's going to be interesting because East has a ton of point guards.
Okay.
When the West has like a much bigger roster, I don't know how that's going to play out. And then also, Kevin Love had knee surgery on Tuesday, is now out for the All-Star game. Haven't announced a replacement, but it's possible they pick another guard to replace him.
Who is that likely to be?
Like, there's been a lot of talk about Bradley Beal.
Okay.
Give the Wizards a second representative to go with John Wall. So then the East would have, I think, 7 guards on a 12-player roster.
It's weird because I feel like that's typically not been the case, where the East has usually been the big team and the West has been the team that can.
Yeah, it's a little different. I mean, the East, I don't think at this point has like a true center on the roster. Their starting front court is LeBron, Giannis, and Jimmy Butler.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's their front court?
Yeah.
I think the East might win this.
The East has a better chance, I think, than they've had in years past. But also, it's the All-Star game, so it's kind of random. It's mostly whoever makes their threes at this point, because there's so many threes that get
taken. And the West still has Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. And...
Yeah, they'll be okay.
Okay.
If you like that sort of thing.
Okay, I wanted to... Any celebrity game thoughts, I guess? Let's talk about that first.
I mean,
are you going? Tell us about the parties, most importantly. You're invited to a lot of the big parties, Rock Nation,
Yeah, no. It's not. Yes. So usually I can't go to the celebrity game because they play the celebrity game at a separate location from the rookie game, which is the main, like the game played at the actual arena on Friday. But so this year, because of the fact that they booked this late, instead of having the celebrity game and all the, you know, the kind of the fan experience events at the convention center, that's apparently already booked. So they're having those in the Superdome this year.
Really?
Which is next door to the New Orleans arena, the Smoothie King Center, which is where the main action is.
Okay.
So I think I should be able to attend both the celebrity game and the rookie game. So I'm excited about that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, who's going to be playing in the celebrity game?
Well, Wynn Butler, as we already noted.
Uh-huh. Of Arcade Fire.
Brazilian legend Oscar Schmidt.
Never heard of him. Okay. He's a Brazilian basketball legend?
He is, yeah. The all-time leading scorer in Olympic basketball history.
Okay.
Kevin
Hart has to be playing, right?
I don't think Kevin Hart is in this year's game.
Coaching? He has to have a movie to
Master promote. P is playing.
Okay.
Former NBA player.
Okay.
In training camp, Master P. Tom Cavanaugh making his triumphant return to the All-Star game.
Wait, who's Tom Cavanaugh?
He was in, what was that show? It was a show where it was just like his first name. Was it Ed? I think it was Ed.
Oh, he was Ed.
Yeah. Jay Will, who preparing for appearing in the 3-on-3 league that's coming this summer. Nick Cannon. That's Baron Davis.
Can Tom Cavanaugh ball?
He's not bad.
Okay.
He's been in past celebrity games. Brandon Armstrong, I don't know, the guy who does like all the imitates players' forms.
Oh, really? Twitter. He's playing.
He is, who is also a former NBA player, and notably recently did Chantel Osahor.
I saw he did Mellow Ball too. I thought that was like you're like imitating a 16-year-old or something.
Yeah, that's a little strange. Oh, both Master P and Romeo Miller, USC legend Romeo Miller.
Really? All right. Well, Wimbledon's got this locked up.
I like his chances. I mean, Oscar Schmidt's probably going to shoot a lot, so he might get MVP.
Okay.
Wynn Butler's on the same team as him.
I want to wrap that. Wynn Butler cleans everything up, though. That's the thing. He's a big man.
He does.
He gets down to the paint. He has.
Oh, also, Mark Cuban is playing in this year's.
Wait, he's playing?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the release I got from the NBA about this misspelled Mark Cuban's name.
Wait, what?
It's M-A-R-C.
Did the Trump administration write that press release? It was both shading at Mark Cuban and also they just misspell everything. The last thing I wanted to wrap things up with, how long have we gone? Are we
an hour 15?
Really?
Yep.
Okay. That's great. We're already here. Okay, I wanted to wrap things up. We need to talk about this. Which is a segment I wanted to call Who Should I Cheer For?
Yeah. So in the past you've, I guess, Portland?
I've mostly been a Blazers fan.
Yeah. The Blazers are kind of out of it for this season, I would say.
But I want to talk to you about this trade that they just made.
Yeah, even though they're nominally, you know, only 2 games back, I think, in the standings at this point of the Denver Nuggets, the fact that they just traded their starting center to the Nuggets, Mason Plumlee, in exchange for the Nuggets' backup center, Jusuf Nurkić, it's a trade that strengthens, they're 2 games back in 10th place, it strengthens the Nuggets, because Nurkić had been kind of pouty and not playing very well there. And it weakens the Blazers, who are going to have to play a totally different style with Nurkić.
Different are they going to have to play just because of Nurkić?
Well, here's the thing is, so basically, the Blazers have 2 guys who can handle the ball and make passes.
Uh-huh.
McCollum and Lillard.
Uh-huh.
The third guy historically has been Plumlee, who is averaging one of the highest assist rates of any center in the league.
Really?
Yeah. You know, their thinking is, going forward, that third guy is going to be Evan Turner.
Okay.
Because he moved into the starting lineup a few weeks ago, and that was pretty successful. But he broke a bone in his right hand last week and is out 5 to 6 weeks. So now it's really just McCollum and Lillard who are creating shots and handling the ball in their starting lineup. And they lost at home in overtime to Atlanta the other night while the Nuggets were busy crushing the Warriors. And solidifying themselves. I think at this point, if anyone challenges Denver for 8th in the West, it's going to be Dallas, who's still 3 games back, but the hottest of those teams.
Okay. What do you make of this trade, though? Because when I saw this news, I said to myself, Nurkić is awesome, right? This looked to me like a great trade for the Blazers. So maybe this is because I'm looking at these lists of yours, where it's like...
Yeah, yeah. It's a very, very pro... foreign rookies. Nurkić had an awesome rookie season.
Okay.
Last year, he most of the year with injury, wasn't 100% when he came back. He had a patella surgery, I think, over the offseason. And then, you know, this year, they started out trying to play Jokic and Nurkić together, and that didn't work at all because they're both centers.
Uh-huh. Their names kind of rhyme, though.
Yeah, I mean, the Jokic front court, if they could have made that happen, would have been pretty awesome, but it didn't take. And then they tried bringing Jokic off the bench, which was crazy because Jokic is one of the 15 best players in the NBA.
Okay.
And then they were like, oh, hey, maybe we should start one of the 15 best players in the NBA and bench Nurkić. And he was really upset about it and has been kind of terrible ever since.
Nurkić.
But he's got to learn to play a more efficient style that is in a team game as opposed to just trying to post up constantly. And then he's got to get back to where he was defensively as a rookie where, you know, he was pretty good against the pick and roll. Block the occasional shot because that's what the Blazers are going to need out of their center.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a good value play. Nurkić has one more cheap year left on his rookie contract. Plumlee was going to be a restricted free agent. The Blazers are already over the luxury tax for next season without...
Evan Turner signing.
I mean, the Turner is a bad signing. Myers Leonard, that's the contract that's really...
What are they paying Myers Leonard?
Almost $10 million a year.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. What did I work, good sir?
It was the least Blazers offseason. And really, that offseason kind of just doomed the Blazers for me.
And then they also got a first-round pick out of the deal.
Not bad. No. Which could still be a lottery pick.
No, they got Memphis's first round pick.
Oh, okay.
Which the Nuggets had. But the pick that's looking pretty good, the Blazers pick, sneakily, they're like tied. They're after the Kings won tonight, they are 10th right now in the draft order. And
they've been good in that range.
They are only like two games away from the Philadelphia 76ers in sixth. Like, this could be a legit pick. There's an outside chance that Markelle Fultz could play for the Blazers, which I don't know what they would do with him, Lillard, and McCollum, but
I would be into that. That would pretty much settle who I was cheering for. Yeah. Okay, so the other options, I was thinking Boston Celtics, who played in Portland last week.
They did, and pulled out a victory, came back from a 17-point deficit. Isaiah Thomas with 15 points in the fourth quarter, 36 in the game, and just continues being amazing.
Was he out of control? I saw
No, because that's just what he does now.
It doesn't count as out of control because Isaiah's just awesome in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That's why the East is going to win. Fourth quarter, Isaiah is going to take over.
Yeah, they just got to keep it close so Isaiah can take it over. They now have the fifth best record in the NBA. They're 2.5 games back of the Cavaliers for first in the East. Cavs just lost Kevin Love to knee surgery. Like, it's out there for them to finish first in the East.
Really?
It's crazy.
With Isaiah Thomas as their star.
Yeah.
I don't hear anything about Al Horford.
It's almost Al Horford is underrated right now. Al Horford, to me, should be the guy who should replace Love in the All-Star game.
I thought you were going to say he's better than Isaiah Thomas.
No.
I was going to say there's more Isaiah Thomas hate coming.
Let's all remain calm.
Okay, the last team was, there was the podcast with Kevin Durant, and then also a very contested game this last weekend between the Warriors and the Thunder, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
I mean, obviously, Oklahoma City fans could never conceive of the idea that someone could lose Kevin Durant. Like, what a concept.
What they were booing, they weren't booing Kevin Durant, they were booing irony.
And weirdly, they got to keep the other 14 players. They didn't lose the whole team like we did. Yeah, I mean, the Warriors, you know, you're going to be called a bandwagon fan because of the fact that they're one of the greatest teams in NBA history, despite the fact that they've already lost as many games as last season. But they're a better team, I think, than last season.
So your argument is they're bad?
I mean, I feel like the Nuggets would be a sneaky fun. Like, if you're looking for, like, a team to support as, like, a neutral fan, and you want just, like, a fun team to watch.
It has an Aaron Gomez on them.
Yeah, fun team to watch if you have League Pass. You're probably going to want to have League Pass if you're going to become a Nuggets fan. Warriors and Celtics better for national TV games. But, like, the Nuggets are really fun to watch.
Huh.
Jokic is maybe the most entertaining
player. I know, you're the number one Jokic fan.
But I'm not. Like, everyone, like, every other opposing broadcast, like, the other team's broadcasters are talking him up. Isaiah Thomas said Jokic was his guy tonight, the old Isaiah Thomas.
Oh,
should we talk about that, by the way?
About Isaiah Thomas versus Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, a question that came up in this podcast that I wrote about and made me public enemy number one briefly in Detroit.
I'm happy that I could have contributed to that. Yeah. In Detroit, not just Detroit, somehow Boston also.
You know, the concept was to compare Isaiah Thomas's current season to the Hall of Fame Isaiah Thomas's best season, which I think is a legitimate, interesting comparison, like an interesting yardstick for the current Isaiah Thomas. It came off as we were asking, is current Isaiah Thomas as good as in his career is the Hall of Fame Isaiah Thomas? Which, surprisingly, it turns out the answer is no.
I'm gonna throw this out there from the perspective of cheering for Isaiah Thomas. Definitely better all time.
Oh yeah, without question.
Isaiah Thomas.
I mean, that was a yes.
The question is Isaiah Thomas better than Isaiah Thomas? Clearly he is. Not just this individual season, but all time. Much better.
Obviously. When you look back on this history of championships.
Look, Isaiah Thomas is probably going to lead the Celtics to a championship this year.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the Celtics, or the Warriors, have already lost as many games as they did all of last year. And they didn't win the championship last year.
That's a whole thing called facts.
Yeah. I don't know who to lean towards, because watching those Thunder fans be mad at Kevin Durant, it's like, ooh, I love that.
But the thing is, like, that's, I mean, they do go there, I think, one other time this season. But it's not like you're going to get that experience in the playoffs, because it's very unlikely those two teams match up.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, the Thunder almost certainly going to finish seventh, so the Warriors would have to somehow slip behind San Antonio.
You don't think that's likely?
No. Okay. I do not think that is.
Oh, happening. Man, I want that to happen so bad. I want there to be a series where Kevin Durant just destroys the souls of people from Oklahoma City. Okay. Well, I feel like the answer is unsettled right now.
Is this going to be a recurring feature?
Yeah, it's a much more interesting recurring feature than talking about... Wait, who are you talking about?
Malcolm Delaney?
Mindaugas Kuzminskas?
Oh, Mindaugas Kuzminskas is fun to watch.
Giorgio Papayannis.
Someday he's going to play in the NBA, Papayannis.
Okay, well, maybe we'll revisit that when Papayannis plays a minute.
Yeah, okay. That seems fair.
Well, we're going to hear next week your experiences in New Orleans.
Yes.
Everything that happened on Bourbon Street with you, your trip between the Superdome and the...
Smoothie King Center.
Smoothie King Center. Let's hear a review of the smoothies also.
I mean, I did not previously have a smoothie at the Smoothie King Center, but like since usually what they do, this is way too behind the scenes, like usually they have media dining at the Superdome in past years, but now since they can't do that, they're instead giving us vouchers for the concessions at the arena. So
there you go.
I definitely have to have a smoothie. I mean, come on.
Maybe there'll be a Whataburger in the arena.
That would be great. probably Popeyes.
All right.
All right. On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.